Hey everyone, welcome to the Balanced Dietitian podcast. I am your host, Marie-Pierre, and for all my English friends out there, you can call me Marie. I am a registered dietitian with a background in psychology. My passion in life is to help individuals heal their relationship with food and their bodies. If you're tired of dieting and tired of restriction, you are at the right place. I'm hoping that this podcast will help and support you as you heal your own relationship with food and your body, and give you the tools, the resources, and the knowledge that you need to finally ditch the diets. Every week, you will be hearing from guest experts and myself on all things food, body, and mind. I am so happy that you're here, and I cannot wait to support you on your journey. Let's get started. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the podcast. I'm so happy that you're here. And if you are listening to this on the day that it's being released, May 19th, today is my birthday and I'm so excited. I am definitely one of these like super annoying like birthday people who like love their birthday so much and they make a really big deal. And like literally the countdown starts like November 19th when it's 6 months out. That's when I start counting when my birthday is. So definitely one of these annoying people, but I'm super excited to release this podcast on my birthday because this conversation was amazing, wonderful. And I have not enough great things to say about Marley Liss, who's coming on the podcast today. So today we talked about healing after trauma and more precisely body image healing and body connection after sexual trauma. And this conversation is so needed. Marley and I were talking prior to recording the podcast and we couldn't stop talking about how my zone of genius was just disordered eating and helping people recover from disordered eating and body image and healing their body image. Whereas her, it's everything, the healing after trauma. Like those two zones are so interrelated. So many women, people who've been through trauma, develop disordered eating, eating disorders, or poor body image and body connection. So I think this podcast is well needed into this world. So I'm really happy that you're here and listening. Now, Marley Liss is someone that I'm so excited to have on the podcast because she is a genius when it comes to this stuff. She has her own experience with sexual trauma that really allowed her to heal deeper and spread this message into the world. So Marley Liss is a sensual reclamation coach, a speaker, an author, and a restorative justice advocate. She's queer, Jewish, sparkle-loving feminist, and trailblazer. Marley made history in the justice system with her sexual assault case when she was the first woman in North America to conclude with restorative justice. And we talk a little bit about this throughout the episode too, because this is so wonderful. So Marley actually was able to share her story on so many platforms. She's a powerful speaker and has presented for a lot of different places, including the U.S. Army Sexual Assault Response Team. She was also on Forbes and HuffPost, BuzzFeed, on The Mel Robbins Show. So you can see that she is someone who has, one, her own experience, her lived experience in the healing journey, but she has been able to take her story, take her pain, and turn it into a passion and turn it into something that she's able to help other women go through. And she is so raw, she is so real, she is so wonderful. And I'm so excited for you guys to hear Marley. All right, without further ado, let's get into the episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Balanced Dietitian podcast. Today, we have an exciting guest. I am so pumped to be talking to her. So today, we have Marley Liss, who's here to talk to us. Hello. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Yay. Thank you so much for having me and for, I feel like your electric, joyful energy beaming through my screen. So I'm excited.
That's awesome. I hope it's going through the podcast too, because I'm pretty pumped about having you here. I feel like you have so much value to bring to this audience. So I think this is going to be a wonderful podcast.
Thank you, love. I'm excited.
Yeah. So before we get into today's topic, why don't you tell us a little bit more about you, where you come from, your origin story, and what got you to do the work that you do today?
Yes. Big question that I will not take 3 hours to answer. So I'm a sensuality coach for women, which is my absolute love of my freaking life. And basically, I help women reclaim sensual empowerment, self-love, body love after trauma, or just a lifetime of internalized shame around sensuality, which I'd say all of us have to a certain degree. And what got me to this work was really my own story, as it so often is. I won't go into any details, but I experienced sexual assault in 2016 that really changed my life, sent me into like a deep dark space, and also brought up a lot of body love and disordered eating patterns for me that I would say were already there, but got so emphasized at that time. And we'll talk about that today, like body shame and trauma and how those might go together, how we can heal that. So for me, the biggest, I mean, that was a huge life-changing event, that trauma. And then even on top of that, I experienced my whole like justice revolution story, in which I was doing so much of my own healing work after trauma. And it was really coming from this space of like survival. It was survival, right? So I got really deep into yoga, somatic healing, which works with the body. I actually started working at the National Eating Disorder Information Center. And that was partially because I was so passionate about this topic for others, and because I knew I needed it. Like, I knew it would help me to immerse myself in that space and those communities and teaching. So that was a big shift. And eventually, like, it's really, my healing sent me all over the world working with Indigenous elders. I lived on like some tantra communes in Portugal. I like walked up the coast of Europe by myself, like did a whole pilgrimage, so many different things. I published my own book on sexual assault, which was literally my journal published. And when I wrote it, I was like, no one will ever see this. And then I ended up publishing it. Story of my life. So eventually, just with all the healing I'd done, all these different things I'd learned about, including really grounded things like the system and just things about incarceration and the justice system and all of these things, eventually I learned about restorative justice and started fighting for that. So basically that means that I fought for my assailant to go to therapy, and eventually we met in an 8-hour circle instead of proceeding to criminal trial. And this is the first time that's ever happened in North America. So since then, I've shared with the media, with Forbes, HuffPost, BuzzFeed. I've been on like talk shows. And that's when I launched my coaching business. I started receiving hundreds, probably thousands of emails from survivors after sharing, saying like, how did you get to this place of not just the justice stuff, but the level of empowerment and vocal reclamation that it takes to be able to go through that whole process. And eventually I was like, oh, life is pointing me right in the direction of my purpose. And it's helping women everywhere reclaim like all the parts of ourselves that get lost through trauma. So that is really what I've dedicated my life to now. And I friggin' love it so much. And just some wild things have happened since sharing, like my story is being made into a scripted series and working on my memoir, so many amazing things. So that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, thank you so much, one, for being so open and honest about it. Like, I think that part of you like makes people like so attracted to you. Like, you are just so real and raw, and just thank you for sharing, because it's not an easy thing to share. And I think we kind of talked about it before, like a lot of people, we kind of hide away from that. We're like, just shit happened, let's just like move over here and like not talk through this pain, which you're like doing the opposite. You're like, let's lean into it so we can heal through it. Yeah. Which is super freaking cool.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And what I learn every time is like the mantra that comes to me is vulnerability is almost always worth it. And I think that was a huge lesson through publishing my book, was for some time I was like, this is my biggest nightmare, to have people see these dark sad, angry, let down, hurt parts of myself that felt like the last thing in the world I'd want to do. And then when I did it and it helped people, it helped me to see, oh, it's bigger than myself. It's needed in this world so that we're not all alone in our shit. And it actually feels really good. It's like I've called it like a striptease of the soul. Like I don't need to hide myself in all these layers, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You're like, I'm just going to show up how I am. And this is it. Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit about like the healing after trauma. And like it's very common through trauma survivors that their relationship to food and to their body becomes very hurt and very painful, and that we start to try to change the way that we look, or we start blaming your body in different ways. So I'd like to dive deeper into that. But before that, why did you decide to go the restorative route? Like, is that through your own healing where you were like, this is what aligns best with me? Like, how did, like, because you said like, you're the first who did this. Like, what made you decide to go down that route?
Yeah, great question. There's a lot of different answers I could give, and I guess the one that's like really from my heart is I was so let down by how we're treating each other in this world by trauma, that I was in that place where I was like, I'm either gonna take my life, is where I got to in the year after trauma, or I'm gonna stay and help create a world that is what I want to live in, that is like where we don't treat each other like that. And so for me, I almost saw it as breaking cycles of harm and saying, well, not like thinking in the big picture, big long-term vision, what would I actually want to happen in my dream world? And it would be like, he actually changes. And I think that's really where I fell into it. I was even thinking like, if he were to have kids one day, like if he were to go on and have kids one day, would I want them to be raised by someone who'd been through extensive therapy, unpacking all of the patriarchal conditioning he's learned, everything that has taught him to justify violence towards women? If he is supported and resourced in unpacking all those things and held accountable to that, and then meets in a circle where he has to like really do the deep inner work of transformation, would I rather that person raise a kid or someone who sat in prison where violence is actually normalized and taught to an even bigger degree? Like 90% of convicted sexual offenders reoffend after incarceration. So there's like my heart-based thinking, there's my very practical statistical thinking of like the system doesn't work statistically. So that's part of it. And then on a very like me focused level, it was very much about my own needs as well. And my needs were really like, I need to have this person witness my grief. I need to hear them take accountability and apologize. I need to see that they've changed and get reassurance that this won't happen again. And none of those things can happen through court, where we're all given these scripts. Like he at least is given a script of what to say, and there's no realness there. And if you haven't noticed, or if it's not obvious, like my biggest value is realness. Like I don't care if whatever. I just want people to be real with each other.
Yeah. And like that comes through so much, like real rawness comes through when you speak, for sure. But that's really cool. I feel like it takes a lot of courage and like advocacy for yourself to be able to do that and go through with that. So before I think we talk about healing, I think it would be really interesting for the audience, for people maybe who've been through trauma or people who haven't, to just understand like, how can trauma impact our relationship to our body and our relationship to food?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
With all the women you've been able to support.
Yeah, well, I said this before we hit record, but I'm so happy that we're talking about this, because it's a topic that I needed more information on. And I remember researching it like years ago and finding next to nothing about that intersection of trauma and body image. And I was like, other people must be experiencing it. And then I saw this stat somewhere that was like 40% of people with disordered eating have a history of trauma. And I was like, why is no one talking about this? This is so important. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, there's so much, and I can speak from theory, and I can also speak from my own experience and say that I was really mad at my body after trauma. I think so many of us experience self-blame. Maybe we're mad at our bodies for how we responded or didn't respond, like fight, flight, freeze. We can shame ourselves for that. And so for me, like, I was really mad at my body for freezing, and I almost like took it out on my body. It's like I had all this anger placed at society, at this person who hurt me, and I didn't know how to deal with that. And so I directed it inwards. I think a lot of us do that. We end up hurting ourselves. And so that was a really big piece of it for me. And then even just on a level of, and this is for any mental health issues, I'd say, is like this level of how motivated are we to take care of ourselves, and how worthy of nourishment do we feel when we're in that low, low place? And it can be really hard to have that motivation to say like, oh, I really want to take care of myself today. I really deserve nourishment. It can be hard to access that when you're in that state. And then the final thing I'd say is that it on such a deep, this can be so subconscious, or it can be a clear choice. Like, we know that our society has sexualized thinness so much, and it can almost be a protective mechanism to say, I'm gonna like eat and eat and eat and eat to put on layers of weight. And there's nothing wrong with gaining weight at all, but it's that intention of almost using our body as like a shield to protect ourselves from harm from other people. Like that mindset is what is harmful, because it's such a survival based mindset to say like, oh God, it's not safe out here. I need to like cover myself up and eat and eat and eat, no matter if it feels good or bad for me. We're actually not even thinking about what feels good for us at that point. We're thinking about how to survive in a complex society.
Yeah, 100%. And it's unfortunately so common. And I've had clients who say like, my fatness is protecting me, because people won't look at me. So even when they're like wanting to recover, it's like letting go of this layer that we've put on of protecting, of like, and what if I'm not fat anymore, right? That is what is protective, or has been protecting me, or our perspective of what is protecting me. So I think you're dead on when we talk about that. And like often too, I think a lot of health professionals are just not necessarily trauma informed, so they may not understand it as much. And we don't see like often, we'll say often with eating disorder or disordered eating, in both ways, that when there's a lot of pain or a lot of hard emotions that we're not able to process or have not been taught how to cope with or how to move through it, our body can become this target of negative like attention to control. Like, this right here is really bad and it hurts really like a lot, and I don't know how to cope. Let me hyper-focus on my body. Because when we do, when we hyper-focus on body and on food, like most people will state like, oh, I think about food and body like 95% of the time, all day long. It's all I think about. Well, when that happens, you can't think about everything else and all the pain that you've been through. So it is in a way a very effective coping mechanism to target your body, because it almost like numbs you to the rest of the pain.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. And that's something I'm very passionate about, is like, not judging our what might have been self-sabotage before or survival mechanisms. It's like that kept me afloat at some point. That kept me afloat. And then slowly, like, there's this beautiful book called Eating in the Light of the Moon that's about food and women's bodies. It's really amazing. And she talks about that. She's like, at some point, disordered eating, emotional eating, all these things are like a log that you're holding on to if you don't know how to swim in the water. And it's literally like keeping you afloat. And you can't just all of a sudden one day be like, bye, and take your hands off. It has to be this slow process of take one hand off, take both off, maybe like take both off for a moment. And eventually you can swim on your own. And at that point, you wouldn't be like, what a stupid log. Right? You wouldn't be like, so dumb. I used to like, well, no, you'd be like, Well, I'm so glad that log helped teach me how to swim. It helped teach me how to do this on my own. So it's like that slow process and not judging ourselves for those times, but having compassion, being like even grateful at some point, being like, wow, like you're saying, I'm so glad that mechanism helped me cope. My body's so brilliant in that way.
Yeah. I love that metaphor so much. Like, I think it's like so visual, like seeing the log and be like, thanks log. Like I would have drowned, but instead you were there. Like, that's awesome. Such a great metaphor. I love that so much. Yeah. Clearly we see that like trauma can definitely impact our relationship to food and body for so many different reasons. And like without trauma either, like our relationship to food and body, I think the fact that we also live in diet culture is probably like adds more emphasis to it. But now let's talk a little bit more about that healing process. Like, where do we begin when healing our body image after trauma? Yeah. Another loaded question for you.
Big question for sure. So I think there's kind of two pieces to look at. And one is, first and foremost, letting go of all the crap messaging we've received. Because it's really like, I'm speaking analogies all the time, but I'm like, we can't put on a new outfit until we take off an old outfit. And if we try to do both at once, it's like not really going to work. Or we try to jump ahead, it's not going to work. So we have to remove some layers of conditioning first. And you're so right. Like, the messages we receive are dense AF from the time we're born. There's stats that say we're exposed to 5,000 advertisements per day on average. That's an old stat, so it's probably higher now. And the diet weight loss industry makes $650 billion per year. Again, that's an old stat. It's probably higher now. And their number one tactic is to say, like, you're not enough, you're not worthy of love without this diet, without being this weight, all this crap that we, you know, are like hopefully aware of, which is important. So to me, there's like a level of empowerment through education on saying, oh, this is why I feel like shit about myself and my body, because of all this messaging, instead of holding this thing of there's something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm like this, right? Like, because that just layers the self-blame that a lot of trauma survivors are feeling with more self-blame. So it's like, okay, break that cycle of self-blame by having compassion and seeing, oh, this culture has really hurt me, whether it's rape culture or diet culture, like starting to direct that outside of ourselves so that we can have some more compassion for ourselves instead of judgment. And so then we can let go of some of these layers of shame and guilt and self-judgment. And we educate ourselves on all these things. And then from that space, we've now created space to put on a new outfit to say, well, what do you actually want to wear? How do you actually want to feel when you go through the world? And this is like the really juicy part of it to me, is starting to go through life with a focus on how you feel rather than how you look. And this is like even the word sensuality, it's like the senses, living by the senses, right? So sensuality is really a really, really, really embodied state of living. You can't be in a state of numbness or dissociation while you're being sensual, because sensual means you're connected to your eyes, your ears, your taste, like you're actually feeling, your senses are online. So this is such a powerful reclamation to me, because you're almost like anchoring yourself in the body. Like you're coming fully back into your body, and then you're experiencing life from the inside out. You're not performing your pleasure. You're not performing your food you're eating. You're not performing your appearance. You're just focused on how you're feeling. And you can kind of like sit back in yourself and get really real about what feels good for you. And even with pleasure, it's not about like, look, like being like the woman in pornography or in whatever. It's like, no, what feels good for you? And that's going to be different for every single one of us.
Mm-hmm. I love that so much. So it sounds like what you're saying is like, one, the unpacking and like taking away those layers. And I think you're right. Like there's a part of like acknowledging of like, what is rape culture? What is diet culture? How has that impacted me? Because I think a lot of people at first, like they don't even know that's a thing. because we're not taught that, like, hey, by the way, the fact that you want to change your body may not belong to you, like that thought, right? So like the understanding of it. And I think there's a piece there too of like feeling the feels and being frustrated with it. Like, I think all of us go through that when we're like, fuck, like all this time, like I was sold this idea. So like really going through that cycle and then to bring in that self-compassion and then moving towards like, okay, and then what aligns with me? Like, how do I ground myself into like what I want?
Yes, exactly. And I love that you said that because it's so true, right? And just continuing with my like striptease analogy, because that's how my brain works. It's like when you take off all those layers, there is that moment where you're like raw and you're kind of naked. And on an emotional level, that means like you're really vulnerable. There's that really raw realness of like exactly what you're saying. Like, what the heck? Why would my culture teach me all this? And that's actually so beautiful because that, I know when we're in it, and I've been there, when we're in it, that can feel like shit. And we're like, healing sucks. And it's like so hard, right? But at the same time, that's our reclamation of self-compassion because that's us saying, wow, I didn't deserve that. I'm upset that my precious little once tiny baby born into this world self received all this messaging. I'm upset about that. And that is a stand for self-compassion. That is us saying and remembering, oh, I deserve better. We deserve better. And so that's where the reclamation happens. So we do need that stage of what I really feel is a reclamation of love. It's like, wow, I'm angry because we deserve better. I'm sad because I care, right? So really reframing those feelings as they're not bad. They're actually beautiful reclamation points that can be very intense to feel.
Yeah, I love how you say that because I think a lot of people, a lot of my clients do, they're like, healing is so hard, like it's so difficult. And like it is, because oftentimes it's also really new. Like, and when it's unfamiliar, that discomfort is a lot higher too, but which makes it really hard.
Hey, 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 I'm interrupting this podcast to tell you about a free workshop that's coming up. So from May 25th to 27th at 12 p.m. Eastern time, I will be offering a free workshop on emotional eating. So I think we can all agree that the last year has been really emotional, been a lot of up and down, a lot of uncertainties. And a lot of us have relied on food as a way to cope, as a way to give us some comfort, as a way to control. So in this webinar, you're going to learn more about emotional eating and really unpacking some of the diet culture BS, but really diving into you and your why, your emotions, your triggers, and how to start coping in different ways. Emotional eating is not something that is bad. It's something that's very normal and every human does it. But when it starts creating some guilt and some shame and you're feeling pretty icky about it, that's when we want to connect and reconnect to you and bringing a little bit of that intuitiveness into it. So if you have been struggling with emotional eating or maybe have, you know, some guilt and some shame associated to your eating patterns or feel like you rely on food a lot, maybe all the time, this is a perfect place for you. So I will invite you to join us in this free workshop on emotional eating. So you can go to www.thebalancedpractice.com/workshop. And all of this information will be in the show notes, so you can definitely check it out there. So I hope to see you in the workshop, and let's go back to the episode.
And what would you say, because I find, because we're doing this healing in diet culture, like I think if we were all on an island and like just healing by ourselves, like it would still be hard, but there wouldn't be like diet culture there to also like shame us and all these different things. Like, what would you say to maybe like women who are living in larger bodies in diet culture, doing the healing, and then their body still like feels unsafe? And maybe part trauma, but also part of like, will I belong in this society? Like how do we reconnect that part?
Mm-hmm. I think this is where it becomes really important. And this is why I love group programs or retreats or whatever, because we actually start to embody a new way of relating. We actually start to embody and experience a culture that's different from diet culture. It's like, let's immerse ourselves in a world that doesn't look like what has hurt us. Let's immerse ourselves in a world that feels so freaking good for us. And this is like the power of group to me. And I use this line a lot. You're creating a new norm for your nervous system. So you're immersing yourself in a space where that threat isn't present. And in that space, you practice, you slowly train your system, you slowly rewire your brain, you slowly alter your breath to create a new norm for yourself. And sometimes, like, just to demystify the body a little bit too, like, our brain is constantly being signaled by what's going on in our body. So if my pelvis, this is really common, if my pelvis is tense and tight and held all the time, my brain's getting the signal that we're not safe. My brain's like, oh, there must be a threat around because her body's tense like this. Like, oh shit, okay. And then my emotions follow that, my actions follow that. Whereas if I'm in a safe space, if I'm in a loving culture, if I'm in one of these group programs where our commitment is healing and supporting each other in that healing, then my body actually has the time and space to relax. It's like, oh, well, let's just see what that's like. Let's just slowly see what that's like. And so my pelvis relaxes and my brain gets the signal, oh, we're finally safe. Oh, we're finally safe. Now we have the reserves to focus on pleasure. Now we can breathe a little better. We can like calm down. We can lower our arousal levels. And by, I don't mean pleasure arousal, but like fight or flight arousal. And then we can just focus on feeling good. And that's like, we slowly start to train ourselves in these safe spaces. And again, I'm going to say like our fight or flight mechanisms are not bad. Those are needed in certain times, but they're not needed all the time. They're not needed all the time. And so what we do is we create a new baseline for ourselves where our baseline is feeling really good. And then if needed, we know how to tap into that safety survival mode when a threat actually is present.
Yeah, I love that so much of like acknowledgement of if you live in a larger body, there is another level because of the society that we're in. And we get to create these new spaces, these new, like this new tribe of people that we can connect with that are also going through that, but also that creates that sense of safety for you. So we're not always in that sense of like, ugh, I'm unsafe, my body's unsafe. We're like, no, our body is safe. We were taught that it wasn't safe, but we get to challenge this a lot, like you said, with the unpacking and then coming back to a group maybe where we feel good. And then I like that you bring like the physicality of your body too, of like how our body is, how our body feels, and what those signals are to our brain, right? If there's ways to actually connect to our body, and I'm breathing, breathing through all of that to really allow like our body to start feeling safe from a physiological level, that can also help with our mental awareness too.
Yeah. And the beauty of focusing on that inner landscape, like the inner body, what you're actually feeling within your breath and everything. The beauty of that too, especially for people who have survived trauma, is it's a reclamation and remembrance that your body is for you, mm-hmm. right? Because if you're focused so much and you're so tuned into what you're actually feeling, and like, there's a lot going on. There's like trillions of cells in our body doing a bunch of shit right now. Right? Like we forget that because we get so focused on how we look. Mm-hmm. We get so focused, and our culture teaches us that. It's not just on us, but that's what most of us are focused on, is appearance. And so when we reclaim awareness of these subtle somatic sensations, that's when we're like, oh, my body is for me. Like my body has a lot going on right now, and it's for me to feel. It's not just about how I look. It's not just a performance at that point.
Ooh, I like that. My body is not a performance. My body is for me to heal or to feel. Yeah, that's wonderful. That's really, really cool. So let's talk a little bit about that, like reconnection to our body. So once we're like going through the healing, which like disclaimer, this takes time. This is not like you listen to this podcast and we are healed. Like it takes time to heal that relationship. And when we're ready to maybe reconnect to our body and to explore that sensual part of us, how do we do that when we have been like disconnected for our body for so long? Or if we're still at a place where we may not love our body, like, is it still possible to connect and be sensual with our bodies.
Yeah. So what I always feel with this, I don't know if I'm going to word this in a clear way. We'll see what happens, but
let's try it out. Let's try it out and see.
Our culture is so weird with sex and sexuality and intimacy. Like, it's like we have our whole life experience in one bubble over here, and then separate from that is sex, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're just like, that is like, we don't talk about that right now. Like, we only talk about, right? So there's this weird thing that we develop where we just separate it so much. Like, we almost think of it as like cliff diving. It's like you're standing on solid ground. You know what you're doing over here. Everything's good. You know how you feel in your body, blah, 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 blah. And if you're going to engage with sex, it's like jumping off a cliff and you have no idea where you're going to go at that point. You could land in a cushion. You could land in a pit, like whatever. And it's because we've made it such a jump from our reality, when in actuality, it's just one, like one breath to another. Like, I can be taking one breath and chilling here, and then I can be taking another breath and like starting to come into a self-pleasure practice. And it's like, it doesn't need to be such a big jump mm-hmm. or big shift, if that makes sense. And the reason I say that is because it's no different than what we were just talking about. If you're already training your body to have a new norm on a feeling level, you're training your body to feel calm in your breath. You're training your body to focus on how you're feeling instead of performing. Then you're already tapped into that way of living, and you've already, and it is a training. Like, your body is like, oh, like even muscle memory, you know, like your body's like, oh, this is how we do things. So from that space, if you work on that constantly, when you're brushing your teeth, when you're meditating, when you're about to go to sleep, if you're constantly re-anchoring in that sense of feeling over performing, by the time you come to a space of intimacy, that's already your norm. That's already your commitment. That's already you're so anchored in yourself. And the moment you're not, you're going to recognize it because you've trained yourself to do that. You're going to be like, wait a second, I'm not feeling as much as I usually do. I think I'm numbing out, and I think I'm dissociating a bit. And again, because you've done all that work that's rooted in self-care, you're going to naturally be in that space of like, okay, what do I need right now? Let's take a pause. What do I need right now? And this is why, like, on a very like grounded, clear tip level, like the best ways to stay in the body rather than dissociate are through breath, movement, like letting yourself move a little bit. You don't need to be like dancing while you're intimate, but just like letting your body move a bit, and sound. So these are the best ways to come out of dissociation and into embodiment. But if we've already created that baseline for being this compassionate and kind to ourselves, and this commitment to being in our body rather than checking out, mm-hmm. we're going to carry those caring approaches into our intimacy. We're not going to step into intimacy and all of a sudden lose every value and norm we have in every other area of our life.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So if I'm hearing this right, it's like the step one is really like that healing and body connection and intuition that we're coming back to our body. So we practice that skill. So when we get into these spaces that are more vulnerable, like sharing our body with someone else or even with yourself, like really that deep connection to yourself can be more vulnerable. It doesn't seem as big of a jump because you're used to feeling into your body already.
Yeah. And even something I talk about with my clients, because it's all so connected, like we're saying, like, I really feel we can't talk about sensuality and sexuality without talking about body shame and body love. Like, it all goes together. And something I even talk about with them is like self-consent around food, right? Like self-consent of like checking in, practicing this all the time. I teach my clients, like, your body's like a friggin', you know, those magic eight balls. And you like shake them and they say yes or no. I'm like, do that with your body all the time. Like, you're about to eat something, tune in, close your eyes. Is your body saying yes or no to that? Okay, my body's saying yes. Awesome. Let's do it. Intimacy, self-pleasure. You're going to come into a self-pleasure practice tune into your body. Is it a yes or a no? Yes. Okay. Awesome. No. Okay. Oh, my body doesn't want touch today. Got you, body. Let's do something else. Do you want to go for a walk? Tune in. Body says, yes, sweet. We're going to go for a walk. Let's do it. And mm-hmm. it's such a loving reclamation to check in with yourself for consent, to see your own boundaries, to see your own desires, to commit mm-hmm. to honoring that yes or no, because that's a big part of trauma. And also like trauma from our culture of like, you're this teaching that our boundaries don't really matter or that they don't have any power. And so when we do this for ourselves, where we're saying, I'm committed to listening to my body and I'm going to honor her yes or no all the time. When we create that practice, we start to really build like a relationship with our body, like a solid relationship. Mm-hmm. And so we can go into intimacy, whether it's with ourselves or with a partner, we can go into intimacy with that level of solidity where we're like, I've got myself. If I don't want to do something, I'm going to say that I don't want to do something. If I do want to do something, I'm going to ask to do it, right? Because we're that committed to honoring our bodies. And that's a big practice. Like that, there's a lot that goes into that practice. And we're constantly teaching ourselves that it's safe to speak our true boundaries, but it is possible. And it is a process of doing it. Mm-hmm. Right? Every time you voice a boundary and it goes over well, or you end up getting what you want or avoiding what you didn't want, again, your brain gets the signal, oh, it's safe for me to speak this. It's actually really good for me to speak this. And so it becomes our norm that way. And that's when we feel safe enough. We're like, oh, I'm going to advocate for myself here. And mm-hmm. we trust ourselves to go into intimacy. Because I think a big part of the fear around intimacy after trauma is, will I shut down completely? Will I check out? Will I lose connection to my voice? And that's when it gets scary.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that so much. And like, I like how you know, the relationship to our body, and we often talk about the different pillars of like, it doesn't start with loving our body. We don't go from hating or dissociating to loving it. But the respect piece and that consent piece is so important within the respect. And then we build the trust, right? As like the more respect that we give towards it, the more that we're able to like, okay, cool, I get to trust myself now. And like, that feels a lot better. And for people listening, because I know with my clients, even when we think of like hunger and satiety cues, which is like the beginning of like tuning in, it takes time too, right? When we've been disconnected from our body for a long time, it does take time to become intuitive. And it's a practice that we continue to do forever on, but that serves us forever on, right? Because I can just imagine listening to like, oh my God, I can't even know if I'm actually truly hungry. Like, how will I know if this is good versus bad? But this comes with time, and it comes with the respect and the trust that we have towards our body. And the more that we practice just tuning in and listening, and sometimes it's okay if you don't know. And sometimes we try and then we see, how did that feel? And that's okay too.
Yeah, I actually use the exact example of hunger and fullness cues when I teach this, because it's the same. It's like we're reclaiming an instinct. And we know that, you know, when we're young little babies, we know when we're hungry, we know when we're full, right? We like cry for mama's breasts when we're hungry, whatever. And same thing with our yes and we're no when we're young. Even like someone puts a toy down in front of us, we don't want it. We push it away very fast. We know what we want. We know what we get a different toy. We're like, I love it. And we like carry around the toy all freaking day long. And it's the same with our yes and our no with anything. But that instinct that we come into the world with, that we all have, gets buried in layers of conditioning, layers of shame, layers of story, layers of judgment. And so once we start to do that unpacking work that we were talking about, of taking off those layers of conditioning, then we can finally unbury that skill and be like, oh yeah, I do know. And mm-hmm. and that's a reclamation process to even notice the desire. And that's like, this is why I work with my clients for like, I'm actually upping it to, I've been done 3 months group programs, but I'm like, let's do 4, because it's a big process, and it's an ongoing process of literally mm-hmm. training the body to be like, oh yeah, I know what my yes feels like. I know what my no feels like. I trust it enough to speak it out loud. And those are all like layers to move through. Speaking it, trusting it, valuing it, noticing it in the first place. These are all reclamation points that we have to move through.
Yeah. I love all of that so much. And I like the time piece of like, always it does take time, but it is so, so worthy. And what would you say? Cause I feel like this would be questions that my clients would have, or the audience would have, of like, but what if you're at a place where you don't love your body, or you're feeling still shameful of your body? Like, can we still engage in that sensuality practice, or is that something to be put off?
Great question. I think part of that is shifting this idea that like you either love your body or you don't, and it's almost like an arrival point, like you're either here or here. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's not that, like, we're so cyclical, right? We're such cyclical beings. There's days where I'm like, oh, like my body, I don't know. And then there's like the next day or the next 5 minutes, I'm like, I'm fucking fabulous. And I'm like, yeah.
Let me go do reels on Instagram today.
Exactly. So I think it's like, letting go of the pressure of the measure is what I'm feeling, like this pressure of measuring how much we love ourselves, because that's just another trap. It's like, oh, well, I can't enjoy my body till I love myself. Like, that's the same as being like, I can't be happy till I have this much money. I can't be happy till I'm this weight. Like, that's all the same. It's just another measure that we're pressuring ourselves with. So no matter what freaking body you're in, no matter how you're feeling today, there's pleasure available to you in your body. And this is what I really teach people is like, you know, you can injure your left leg and your left leg can feel a lot of hurt. And at the same time, your heart can feel really open and amazing and more free than ever. Similarly, like there can be a funeral on your street and a birthday party two doors over. Like, it's about realizing like coexistence is possible. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have to have 100% body love for myself in order to access feeling good. I don't even have to feel 100% safe and skillful in navigating rape culture in order to access feeling good. It's like, no. Let's give ourselves more compassion and be like, wherever I'm at, as I am today, however the heck I start all my client calls with, however, welcome, like we're feeling, however the heck we're feeling. Like, I always start with this because you don't have to feel like X, Y, Z to access pleasure, safety, joy, love in your body.
I love that so much. I think like this was like the perfect response. And it kind of goes back to what you said at the beginning, is that we're moving away from like the way our body looks to the way that our body feels, and like connecting to our body, regardless on how we feel about our body that day. And like, that's where we see like for the way we frame body confidence. It's not like, oh, I look good in the mirror. It's like, I feel confident that my body is good no matter how I feel about it today. And like moving into that a lot more. That's so wonderful. So last question for you, for our listeners, like what are tips that you could give listeners to start reconnecting to their sensuality today if they wanted to?
Yeah. So one of my favorite things to do, and I'm all about of breaking out of rigidity. Okay, I'm gonna give up. Rigid stuff is because I used to be so militant with my self-help and healing. I was like, if I'm gonna heal, I need to meditate for 1 hour in the morning, and then I need to go outside and connect with nature, and then I need to journal about how I'm feeling. And I was like, if I don't do any of those things, I will not heal. I was like, so, and I think a lot of us are like that, because that's like the capitalist, like patriarchal conditioning that seeps into our healing. Again, that's the same thing as saying, I can't feel pleasure until I 100% love the way my body looks in the mirror. Like, that's just the same thing seeping into our healing. Yeah. So what I love to do is carve out time in the morning. So maybe I set an alarm and I say, every morning I do something for 20 minutes that brings my body pleasure. I never pre-plan what it's going to be. So I wake up and I close my eyes and I say, body, what would feel really good for you right now? And sometimes my body's like, ooh, I want to meditate. Sometimes my body, this is my favorite one, my body's like, I want to put on music and strut outside. I call it a mindful neighborhood strut. So my body's like, I want to strut down the street to the tune of Beyonce. Sometimes my body's like, I want to go back to sleep, man. Like, I'm fucking tired. Sometimes my body's like, I want to journal. Sometimes my body's like, I want to self-pleasure. I want to give myself touch. So many different things. Sometimes my body's like, I'm hungry. I want to eat right away. So it's just carving out that space and committing for the next 20 minutes. I'm going to give myself that pleasure. And it could change in the middle, you know? I could be like, okay, now I'm done dancing. Now I want to do this. And on a very simple level, the beauty of this is you're doing something that brings you pleasure. Like, it's, you're going to connect with pleasure first thing in the morning. So I think that's, it might even sound simple, but it's such a powerful practice because we don't even realize how much pressure we hold around what self-pleasure can look like. There's so much expectation, and often we're like, oh, I'm going to self-pleasure, and we're not doing anything that feels good for us. We're just doing what feels good for, you know, that person in that video over there. And to break that up with the exact same training and practice we've been speaking of no, I'm committed now to listening to my body. I'm committed to letting my instincts and boundaries and desires guide my life rather than what I should do, rather than what my meditation teacher or even coach or whatever said I should do. I'm going to create the space to listen to my body. And that's relationship building. And this is really, just to wrap that up, like, this is really how I feel about body love, is it's not about loving the way you look, but it's about cultivating a healthy relationship with your body the same way you would with a partner. And with a partner, we know we don't get to a point where we say, oh, we're good now. Oh, we don't have any problems now. We never fight anymore. Everything's rainbow and stuff. No, we're like, it's a relationship. Some days are great. Some days are harder. Luckily, we have some awesome tools and communication methods to come back to love when we're triggered. And it's an ongoing process. And there's a lot of joy and beauty and pleasure available through the relationship that we get to just enjoy as a gift in this life. So that's really how I approach body love, is like, it's an ongoing relationship with my body.
I adore that so much. I think this whole conversation was super helpful, and just, you're full of insight and metaphors, which was wonderful. So tell us, where can we find you? What are you doing now? Where can people get more of you?
Yes. Well, first of all, connect with me. I love connecting with humans. Like, send me a DM and be like, girl, I just listened to your podcast, blah, 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 blah. Like, just message me. On Instagram would be best. So at Marley Liss. Maybe you can just put a link, but it's MarleeLiss. Mm-hmm. And this is coming out mid-May. So I'm going to be right in launch mode for the next round of my deep dive signature program, Sensual Wholeness Academy. It's fucking juicy and magical and healing and empowering AF. It's exactly what we've been saying of, like, it's a space, a safe space for us to unpack a lot of that crap around sensuality and all these things, and then start embodying feeling amazing. And I just live for the transformations that happen in that space. And I've seen women, like, leave toxic relationships, move across the country, start their dream career, like, build the empowerment to ask for a raise, like, have their first orgasm after years of feeling numb. Like, there's so many different outcomes that come from this healing work. So if you're feeling called to it, yeah, like, you're feeling that little spark in your belly or whatever right now, like, go to my Instagram. We'll be open in May for one-to-one clarity calls, so you can connect with my team, have a totally free call where you'll receive a lot of support and guidance around your essential reclamation journey, and then you'll see if the program's a fit for you, and you'll know if it is. That's what I always say. I'm like, trust your body. You'll know if it's for you. And I'm always honored, honored, honored AF to help and connect with women in this journey.
That is awesome. And everything will be linked in the bio, so you'll be able to check it out. Yes. So before we leave, we have a round of like fun questions. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
The first one is, what is your favorite food?
Ooh, I love pasta. Like any pasta I live for.
Ooh, yes. Pasta is the best. The second question is, if you could have a superpower, what would it be?
What would it be? Okay, you know what? This is very gay of me. I'm a gay woman, so I can say that. This is very gay of me, and I don't even really know what it means, but I just pictured myself. You're going to love it.
Yeah, okay, I'm like bracing myself. I'm like, what's coming out of your mouth?
I just pictured myself riding rollerblades, and there's like a rainbow shooting out of my back. And so everywhere I go, I just like spread a rainbow trail behind me.
Have you ever seen the meme? It's like a cat and a Pop-Tart.
No.
Okay, so it's a cat and its body is a Pop-Tart, and everywhere he goes, there's like a rainbow following him.
Yes, that's exactly it. That's what I saw.
But would it happen when you walk to, or just if you're on rollerblade?
So the vision I had was on rollerblades. So, but maybe part of the superpower is that there's like a natural, like I'm always on rollerblades.
Love it. So I have to say, this is the first time I hear this superpower. So
I was like, don't go with fly, Marley. It's too obvious. Yeah. It's like, what do you really want?
true here. What is your favorite way to self-care?
Oh, favorite way to self-care. Oh, I think of a bath right away.
Yeah. That is wonderful. And then last question for you, because this is the Balanced Dietitian podcast. What does balance mean to you?
Yeah, I guess it feels similar. Like my program's called Sensual Wholeness Academy, and I use this word all the time, wholeness. And I feel it's the same as balance. It's just like, let's stop trying to choose one part of ourselves and like limit ourselves to that thing, that one thing. And let's like realize that we're all of it. And so that's the same as me to balance. And I guess an example I think of is like, there's so many women who feel we have to choose between being really soft and vulnerable and loving and like, you know, real and raw verse. And we feel we have to choose between that and being like really strong and powerful and badass and whatever. And it's like, no, you can be, and we are all of it. So that's what I think of with balance, is like being a multifaceted queen.
Ooh, I love that. That is wonderful. Well, thank you again for being part of this podcast. I think this conversation will help a lot of people. Everything will be linked in bio so you guys can go find Marley. And just thank you again for just sharing your genius with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you everyone for listening.
Oh my God, my friends, wasn't that just wonderful? Marley is such a wonderful, beautiful human, and I'm so grateful again that we were able to have her on the show and talk about this topic that is so very important. I hope you got a lot from it, and if you did, please do share and review this podcast. Reviews help us share this message, share the anti-diet message, but also this whole revolution about the body empowerment that we're really working hard on. So I really hope that you were able to enjoy it. Marley's information are in the bio, so be sure to check her out. Follow this beautiful human, because she has a lot of wisdom to teach us. On that note, my friends, I hope you really enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to join us too for the emotional eating workshop that's going to be happening soon. And I cannot wait to see you or talk to you in the next episode.